Bang, there we go. All right, let's get back to the slide deck. So, thanks everybody. I'm glad to see a few people who said they were going to attend in the audience. This talk's going to be on GitHub Actions. It's relatively new to our team. First of all, just a little bit of a personal introduction. My name is Matthew Watkins. I've been with the Linux Foundation for nearly 2 years now. Started my career in the technology business after I graduated with a degree in physics from York University in the UK. I live in York now. What got me into this business was I discovered this thing called the internet when I was at university. We had some Silicon Graphics workstations and a big Unix mainframe system. That was probably my first introduction. You're talking about Pine as an email client. I think the thing that excited me most back in the day was there was lots of interviews with Andrew Eldritch from the Sisters of Mercy rock band. And I was reading all this stuff and thought, this is great. People are going to love this. This internet thing is going to become really popular. Anyway, I graduated in 1997, moved to Cambridge, lived there for 20 years, accidentally became an internet network engineer. So I worked at a big service provider back in the day called UUNET. A number of ISPs followed, sometime working for equipment resellers in the networking space. Financial services companies, you name it. I've been around the block a few times. Actually worked 8 years at Nokia Research Center and Nokia Technologies during the period when we divested our phone business to Microsoft. Systems administration, Sun Solaris back in the day. Obviously, later on, Linux has taken over the world. That's why we're here. I've done a recent pivot, late stage of my career, to software. I've got an app on the App Store that I managed to get listed during lockdown, taught myself Swift and Swift UI, Python programming too. And I work in the release engineering team. So my job is to make sure you guys, you developers, are as productive as possible, try to get out of your way and try to make sure everything runs smoothly. So I'm also, I think, the first and only hire currently in the IT organization at the LF in Europe, which means I do a lot of break fix for these systems to keep them running for you. It also means if you need support here in the European time zone, I'm probably your man. So you can find me on Slack and I'll happily try and help. Now, a quick overview of the topics. So I just want to briefly review the existing tooling. I don't want to take it for granted that you guys are familiar with all the stuff we run. So I just want to touch on those topics briefly before I give you an overview into GitHub Actions, dig in some details about how these workflows can be built and how they operate and the various features that you get in GitHub. And I want to try and do some interactive demonstrations while we're on there so it's not just these static slides you see above. All right, so let's start out with the DevOps statement of intent. You guys know this, but a mindset should always be that we carry is that we want to automate ourselves into a better job, and we want to make sure that the task we're doing manually becomes automated later. Automation is good. Don't repeat yourself. And with that in mind, a lot of the features of these modern platforms are based around this sort of thing: modularity and the ability to daisy chain components together to do more complicated tasks, right? And for me and our team, you know, we want to make sure that the stuff we do is reusable, particularly amongst all the different communities we in the Linux Foundation support. So when we're talking about the existing tooling, one thing I need to mention is that for a lot of our projects, source code is available in more than one place. We have two potential Git repositories for most projects, right? The front end for almost all of the big projects is Gerrit, right? And that's obviously got a Git backend with a web portal interface. Now, the reason Gerrit is going to be staying around for the foreseeable future is that we consider it best in class for code review and code auditing and for change management, right? So that's not going away anytime soon. In most cases, projects are already replicating to GitHub, which means we have a Gerrit instance and there's a mirror of that repository in GitHub. Now, that relationship's good because it means we can leverage some features of GitHub alongside the existing code review and code submission process that goes through Gerrit. It does, however, and this is a major caveat, some of the topics I'm going to talk about in this, that there needs to be a caveat in that not everything can be done directly in GitHub when this relationship exists, right? If you're GitHub first and you don't have Gerrit in, then that unlocks a lot of capabilities that you otherwise won't have. So I'm going to flag that when we come across those things, just so that I'm clear that when this actually applies to you. For a long time, I think we've really wanted to start to leverage some of GitHub's features. but we were held back by missing API features, right? I think there was some issue with Garrett not supporting some functionality we needed to connect with GitHub, and that meant that basically we've only really been able to move forward with GitHub Actions relatively recently. You're talking in the last few months, okay? I think we did a round of Garrett updates about 2-3 months ago, and since then it's full steam ahead, right? Some of you may have already noticed, actually, we've started moving some of our verification jobs into GitHub already, okay? And I'll show that later on. One thing, though, one word of note, when we started working with GitHub Actions, we did find some trouble related to if you have poorly performing synchronization of those Git repos between Garrett and GitHub, then you can find that a change raised in Garrett basically invokes a job in GitHub, and the code for that change hasn't actually made it to GitHub yet, right? And you'll see a failing job. Generally, I think we find that most of those kinks out is to do with the number of threads and the latency. You know, that replication can be almost instant, should be pretty quick. But if there are any issues and you see problems with jobs being invoked in GitHub, probably a recheck might solve that. And in fact, I think at least one person member of the audience flagged this with me earlier in the week. So, all right, so the existing tooling, a big part of this is Jenkins, right? So when you make a change, raise a change in Garrett, Jenkins generally has been traditionally running the verification jobs, the merge jobs, all those things that publish artifacts. And basically, this is where the vast majority of our CI/CD pipelines have been to date, right? Basically, Jenkins is hosted in a provider called VexHost over in the US. The CI jobs actually run on an isolated network. Executor nodes are in a pool. And if actually there's not an available node, the spin-up time can be pretty slow. The reason is these are actually conventional server instances on OpenStack, right? And if there isn't a server available, you've got to start one up. And then Jenkins sits there waiting for that server to become available before we can push the job, right? Obviously, the spin-up time can be slow in some instances. So one of the big advantages of GitHub is basically Actions run on containers. And that means the scheduling and operation of those containers can be very, very quick indeed, right? That's a big benefit when you actually sat there looking at a job. Also, it's potentially easier to tap into things like pre-built images that can come from GitHub or Docker Hub, right? Because right now, most of the images reside in VexHost on OpenStack, right? There's build jobs for creating like the baseline images that runs your jobs. And of course, so one thing I would say is that the Jenkins, we have this thing, Jenkins configuration as code and Jenkins job builder and global JJB, right? So we tend to basically build these job templates in global JJB. Those are shared across all the projects. Then projects take those templates, kind of instantiate them. And this is where we have this concept of a CI management repo. Okay, so there's normally, most of the big networking projects have a CI management repo. And in there, that's basically where all the job configurations live. Now, things are quite different in GitHub Actions, right? So firstly, configuration files are authored in YAML. There's a fixed directory location inside a repository where you put your workflow files. So your workflow definitions actually sit alongside the code, all right? So unlike CI management, where it's in a separate repository and all the jobs are grouped together, in this case, the jobs are distributed throughout the repositories, okay? That location is kind of blessed, and when you put a workflow definition file in that folder, GitHub will attempt to parse it, and assuming the YAML and the GitHub Actions syntax is correct, you'll see a new workflow appear in the user interface, right? Also, the thing about GitHub Actions is they're modular, right? So inside a given workflow, you can basically pull in other actions, right? And those actions can live in a Git repo and can be version controlled, and you can specify which version of an action you want to run by basically linking it to a specific tag. I'm going to show you some sample code for how these jobs are defined in a minute. And as I mentioned, you can run your workflow definitions through YAML linter, and there's actually some specific tools for GitHub Actions linting available too, so you can make sure that your syntax is correct before you check them into the repository. Now, also jobs in GitHub Actions can be triggered using a number of different ways. They can be triggered manually. That means there's a button available in the interface where you can run an action explicitly. You can also have them triggered by a variety of events automatically, so you can define various triggers, and you can also run them on a cron. And in fact, it's typical Unix cron syntax, which means if you want a job to run on a Monday, it's the same thing you put on a server, right? Okay, so here's some examples for the kind of syntax we get, right? If you want to run a job manually, you need to explicitly basically declare this workflow dispatch And that allows you to run it manually and invoke it manually. Cron syntax, as I mentioned, you can also quite handily basically have a bunch of conditional type invocations based on things like pull requests. So when someone raises a pull request, you can run builds, you can run documentation jobs, you can run other verification jobs. And also you can do things like trigger on tags or trigger on specific branches. The tags is particularly useful if you want a release job that publishes artifacts, pushes them into Nexus, or bundles files up in GitHub itself, or pushes Python packages to external package repositories like PyPI. Okay, so you've got a number of hooks available. This is where I should once again caveat that if you have stuff in Gerrit, for example, then the jobs need to be triggered using workflow dispatch in Gerrit. So if your primary mechanism for interacting with the Git repo is Gerrit, then some of these triggers are not going to be available to you. Okay, just something I need to flag and point out this time. There's also some great little capabilities like this where you can, inside a workflow definition file, you can specify a number of Python versions with which to execute a given job. So you want to test your code against Python 3.9, 3.10, or 3.11, or do builds, you know, these different Python versions. These matrix jobs basically all run in parallel. They all get deployed on containers at the same time. And typically, they don't add to the job execution time. I've also put in bold here, you can see there's this option called fast fail. If you set that, then if any of those jobs fail on any of the Python versions, the others can be canceled and stopped immediately. That saves you running up unnecessary costs when you've decided at least one of your builds is failing. Okay, you may not want that, but it's there as a nice little option. Okay, so this is an example of a release job. Essentially, for a Python project, this is really great because you can basically push a tag. And you can see in this change that actually we pushed a V104 tag. There was no code change, but simply pushing the tag triggered basically a build. It triggered a test publisher of packages to test instance of PyPI. And then afterwards, when that succeeded, it actually pushed a release out. And it also published a tarball bundle to GitHub itself, okay? And I'm going to demo this now and show you a live demonstration. For example, this job does pretty much the same thing, but it's a development release. So let's take a look and see if we can actually run this. So because this is manually invocable, this workflow basically has a button on the top right. If you don't set that manual trigger, that doesn't exist, right? So you're going to be reliant on something else invoking the job. And there we go, right? We've got a new job running. So it's just appeared. It's flagged as yellow. We can click into it. And you can see we've got several steps. The way these steps have been configured is that they can be dependent on each other. So you can basically name an earlier stage, and then the later stages, you can say, it depends on this, right? That way, that gives you some sequencing. You can see that some steps can run in parallel, others actually run linear, one after the other, okay? And while the job's running, you can actually click into it to get some progress, right? Now, each of these headings is essentially just a small block of YAML code, right? The build's finished, right? So that's, you can see how fast this is. Let's go back. All right, now you can see our build succeeded. In fact, it's also built the tarball and published to GitHub. And once again, you can see there's a number of steps here. One of these nice features is that when you have a build job that produces artifacts, you basically flag those artifacts and they then become available for subsequent steps. So the piece that does the GitHub publish basically accesses those artifacts and then works with them. So it's very straightforward and very easy. I'm going to show you the YAML code where that's defined in a minute. And yeah, and then this publishes to GitHub. So now we can actually take a look. Okay, and if we go to let's go back to tags. All right, we've got a development release in GitHub. And if we click into this, you can see we're using some Fruity versioning scheme. Basically, when it publishes the artifact, it includes the Python build version plus a date stamp, right? And you can see that this just run. You've got little tireballs there, 1 minute ago, source code, a wheel file for Python so you can start testing if you need to. And we can use the actions button on the top to go back, and we see now that the test build and release process is finished, right? So all our jobs succeeded. Okay, let's go back to the slides. So one of the interesting things is that GitHub allows this concept of trusted publishers. Now, typically, you would need to embed some secrets into your workflow in order to interact with external services such as the Python package index, okay? But one of the nice things about this is actually it allows you to remove these static long-lived credentials from your environment. That little screenshot there is actually of the BYPI interface where you set up trusted publishing. And in this case, we basically said, hey, I trust GitHub and this basically repository, and this workflow can basically publish artifacts to me. And that's how you get this one-click kind of relationship. Also, it means you can remove the typical tokens and secrets from your workflow and from the environment in GitHub. But I've embedded some links in here. It uses OpenID on the back end. I think it's OpenID Connect. This is basically OAuth 2, 2.0, right? And there's some documentation on PyPI and GitHub that explains how this works. Really nice if you're doing Python stuff. But it's probably also true for a lot of third-party repository stuff in AWS and Azure and things like that. And this is the kind of change where you implement trusted publishing. Now, if you're not doing this yet in GitHub, they'll actually start flagging it because they want everyone to move to this system. It basically uses short-lived credentials and tokens instead of these permanent secrets that you really don't want kind of floating around in your environment. So yeah, it's a matter of like you remove three lines and drop another line in. Now, this is slightly tangential to GitHub Actions, but there's also concept of GitHub apps. And one of them, there's a number installed in this repository here as an example. For example, you can have hooks into Slack so that your build jobs can basically output progress reports into Slack. A quick demonstration of what that looks like. You're probably familiar with it because this is fairly common. It's a fairly common use case for Slack, but here I've got a DevOps channel. All right. And you can clearly see that when we're submitting code, you've got verification jobs coming through. All right. It's quite nice. Also, and this is where I wanted to show you some nicer features as well, is this pre-commit CI. Okay. Now, if you're used to working with Git and you've got pre-commit hooks in your repository, you want to run some linting tools, you want to run pre-checks to make sure that the code you're checking in is good. There's an app for this, actually. Once again, caveat, this doesn't integrate well with Gerrit because what this app does actually is it needs write access to your repositories. It can do things like automatically update your linting tools. So you have your pre-commit file, it's in your repository alongside your code. But what it does is every time it runs, it checks for updates. And if there are updates in your linting tools, be it YAML lint or whatever, it'll bump the version number and raise a PR, right? And then you just go in and prove it, merge it, and everyone gets the latest version of linting. This is really nice because it basically manages that process for you. It also stores the audit logs for your linting tools in a cloud-hosted service. And if you're a public open project, when your source code's in a public repo, there's no charge associated with this. It's actually quite a nice thing. Also, you can have this run when code is checked in, like a pull request is raised, which means everybody gets to see the linting output, not just the developer who's submitting the change, right? So you might run linting locally, but that's no good if the other people don't get to see that, right? So it's nice to move your linting off your local machine and into the pipeline, right? So let's just show how this works. Oh dear. All right, maybe we won't show how this works because otherwise I've got to fiddle around trying to grab some credentials, but I can probably find another link in the slide deck. Let's take a look at the pull request instead. So here's an example of a pull request that was raised, okay? And you can see all the jobs that were triggered against it here, right? So we can run unit tests. We can do Python package auditing for security auditing. And you can see there's different versions of this where we've got matrix operations where we're running against Python 3, 3.9, 3.10, and 3.11, three different versions of those all alongside each other. And in fact, if we want to take a look at what our pre-commit hooks complaining about, right? This is a Python project. We've got a lot of legacy code. We've got some cleaning up to do here, right? You can see all of these individual linting checks are being run, everything from cosmetic stuff about trailing white space through to problems with your documentation, like Markdown lint here is running and saying that there's a file which it doesn't think is formatted correctly. Yeah, and we've also got some Python code auditing there. So I have to spend some time bashing on the code in this repository to get it up to scratch. Yeah, I've done that. And here's an example of this tool basically raising its own change request. in this case, it's basically raised a pull request to update one of the linting tools in our pipeline. It's quite nice. You just go in there, merge it, away you go. Everyone gets the update. All right, this is another feature that's available. It's, once again, it's a little bit of an aside, but there's also a feature called Dependerbot, which is quite helpful in that it will audit your Python modules, and it will basically do a graph, dependency graph of them, and also do the same thing. It allows you through GitHub to invoke it on a schedule once a week. And using that, you can basically verify and check the security posture of all your packages. And it doesn't just support Python. I think there's a whole bunch of stuff here for Java applications too. I put the links in there because the documentation is really quite good, but that's another feature you get when you start doing stuff in GitHub. So there's also this really helpful feature, which is reusable workflows, basically. And these are basically special workflows that are designed to be embedded in other workflows. So this is where the modularity comes in. And a lot of the existing YAML code that I've got for these that are running these things I've been demonstrating basically are called in this manner. You basically can put a tag on them for versioning. And then using these, you can then embed them in other workflows. And this is what really gives you the modularity. And this is where some of the power and the advanced stuff comes in. Okay. So you can reduce your redundancy in your workflows, reduce duplication. And they're very easy to create. So ideally, a lot of this stuff can become a lot more sort of self-contained. And then you don't end up with these being replicated and spread across 20, 30, 40 different repos in your project, right? You can maintain a single code base for this action. You update it in one place. Everyone gets to see the benefits of the changes you're making, right? So there's a few things with them though. Obviously, because they're modular, you need a way of passing inputs in. You can also have explicit outputs, which you may or may not need, but you can set whether they're mandatory or not. So this is one way where you can pass external information in, either versioning or various flags to the jobs, so you can then have conditional behaviors. So this gives you the ability to embed additional logic into these. But it's all very straightforward, really. It's kind of, and in fact, we've started authoring a bunch of reusable workflows in the LF, which is basically one of the projects we've been working on the last couple of months. Essentially, this repository is where we're now rebuilding some of the verification jobs, et cetera. And this is a public repo, so you can see the work that we're doing here. Once again, big directory full of YAML files, all right? Each one of these. And as mentioned, the thing that makes this a reusable workflow is that it supports this workflow underscore call. You declare that at the top, that means this can then be embedded in other workflows, all right? So we've got a whole bunch of inputs that you can spec. In this case, it's all stuff from the Garrett, right? So this is what we're using to recreate the magic that we've been doing with these jobs where they were previously running on Jenkins. And now we're gradually, piece by piece, migrating them into GitHub Actions. So yeah, we're porting them. And these are some example links of where you might see them. I've name-checked Robert's Open Daylight here. We've got a change earlier on today. And you can see that here. We've got actions triggering in GitHub on a Garrett change for one of our projects. Okay, and let's take a look at the second one. Yeah. All right. Now, this job's running all the usual checks. So it's running some linting, pre-commit. It's checking various things. And assuming everything goes well, you've got this last voting step. And I think this was one of the missing features where I said we've been waiting a little while before we were able to do this. I think voting back to Garrett requires on that API level communication between GitHub and Garrett. We were waiting for some features to drop. But now what this lets us do is put a plus one into the Garrett change, right? So our GitHub actions can now vote on Garrett patches. Yeah. So also one thing that I've been finding, if you're spending a lot of time developing workflows, eventually the kind of cycle time of, I'm going to check my code in, I'm going to push the change out, then I'm going to see if it runs in GitHub, and you go back and you iterate over that, that can be a little bit slow. So there's actually a really good tool called Act, and this basically lets you run GitHub actions locally on your laptop without actually going through the portal. Now there's some caveats, for example, when you're running these actions locally, you don't have the full GitHub environment available. So things like trusted publishing aren't going to work, right? Because you're going to need secrets and tokens and SSO in order to talk to the Python package index, for example. But actually, if you're prepared to comment those features out and just want to iterate and test a workflow locally, this can be really, really useful. requires a local Docker install, and you need a suitable base image to execute your workflows with. You can find those online. I actually built one for myself. Did find some caveats. For example, if you're running an Apple Silicon Mac like I am, certain jobs will try pulling down Python binaries, which are x64 specific. Okay, so there are some caveats, but yeah. And it's pretty straightforward. You can basically, there's a little configuration file sticking in your home directory, and you just specify the image you want to run for any given workflow. So if you call Ubuntu latest in a workflow, you can basically delegate which image is available on your local machine to run that. And interestingly, mainly all you need is reliable Python and a modern Node.js. If you've got those two things, most workflows will run quite happily. I've got an example screenshot there, but hopefully, with any luck, I might even be able to. So I've set up a shell alias that just invokes the workflow here. And this is actually running the build process for one of those repositories I showed you earlier on, executing each of the steps. And in fact, this actually tries to sysdoor sign some binaries, and it does some calls out to an external site, which is why it will eventually fail. But it's quite nice to see GitHub Action running locally on your machine. Yes, it's pretty handy. And in terms of any follow-up, obviously you can reach out to us because we're you know, the release engineering team, we're deep in this at the moment, and it's quite high up our list of priorities to support our jobs. I put some bookmarks at the end of the presentation here. Things like there's a public roadmap where they're throwing new features into GitHub Actions. Lots of useful links at this point. I'm pretty much done, so I guess I'm gonna throw it open to questions.
I have some questions related to the action runners.
Yeah.
Where they are hosted.
Yeah, okay. So so for example, let's... So I'm at the top level of a Git repo here, right? I just go into the GitHub folder and into workflows, right? And each one of these is an individual YAML definition for a workflow. So for example, the build... This is, for example, one of my YAML files. So right here you can see this one can be invoked manually. It also gets automatically triggered when you raise a pull request. So you can see that this is a matrix job, right? It's running under an Ubuntu latest container. I've actually done some things like embed some date and other variables as shell code. If you want to store those for later use in the workflows, you can basically pipe them to a variable, basically, and then pull them back later. So you can have some shellcode do some setup work, grab certain values from the environment if you like, and then use those values later on in the job. There are some pre-built actions here which you just reference, right? So these are coming from GitHub themselves. Like to check out your code repository, you call the or setup Python. You call this v4 version of this setup Python action, okay, and then. Once again, we've got a job here that pulls some shell code down. Finally, at the end, it uses Tox to build some Python code.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Second question is related to the container registry. You know, you have the commit stage or build stage, and then I have acceptance stage before taking it to production stage. The acceptance stage is dependent on the completion of the commit stage or the build stage. So once the build stage is done, where the release candidate, I mean, the artifact will be registered. I mean, are we going to use GitHub container registry or external one? Or
it's entirely up to you, actually. You can obviously publish. You can actually publish releases or pre-releases to GitHub, as I demonstrated earlier. Most of our projects are using software like Sonatype Nexus for binary artifacts, okay? And really, it's just the same as we're doing with Jenkins right now. Okay. You simply need credentials to talk to Nexus, and you can publish your artifacts through that mechanism.
Okay.
So yes, if you're saying, where do you want this stuff to go? It's just a matter of having a relationship with the platform where you want to deliver them. It could be a Python package repository. It could be Nexus, for example. Yeah.
So moving to GitHub Actions, so the artifacts will be pushed to the own external registry, right? Like Nexus. So.
It could be indeed. Right now, I think it's primarily the verification jobs we've moved over, but okay. Eventually it could be the merge jobs that deal with the actual publishing.
Okay.
So that's coming. All the changes we've been doing migrating jobs to GitHub Actions haven't been actually the project jobs. These have been shared LF jobs, which are common across all our projects. Okay. So you guys may have been seeing this, but we're not actually making changes in your code. Your jobs are still currently in Jenkins and defined using JCask and JJB and Global JJB.
Okay.
But I think what we really want to do is dog food this and lead the way. And when we've got our ducks in a row, I think we'll be talking to you guys about, you know, are you interested in this? You know, what benefits is this going to bring?
Okay.
So hopefully I've answered your questions. Tuan.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, for a very good presentation, really helpful.
Thank you.
Just a quick question just on the visibility of the jobs themselves, like who has access to see the jobs and the details, and how does that work?
It's set on an organization basis. Right now, I think there's fine-grained access for individuals, but it's managed through GitHub's normal organizational structures, yeah.
So everybody in so for instance myself, can I see the jobs you just showed us or not yet? Sorry. Yeah. Can I the jobs that you showed earlier, can I for instance see them myself?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want to view them, I'm not sure about actually manually triggering. That might be a permission you need to have as like a developer level access, but I would imagine organizing this for you guys.
Anybody who's in the org can
just Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, thanks for the presentation. Very good. I'm just wondering, is the plan for this to replace eventually the Jenkins jobs, or what's the story?
Yeah, I think we're trying to avoid doing new work in Jenkins where we can. Definitely there's some desire to get as much of our stuff into GitHub Actions as we can. I mean, one of the good benefits is that you've got a very generous free allocation of minutes from GitHub, right? And that means this comes at, a lot of this will come at a low cost or zero cost. That's quite a big draw because we pay for every server instance that's running stuff in VexHost. However, there may be some stuff that, due to the investment, the long-term investment we've made in Global JJB and JJB, there may be some stuff that's very difficult to port. So I think initially we're going to tackle the low-hanging fruit. How long it might take us to get some of the bigger, more complicated jobs, and I don't know whether that's even feasible. We're certainly not looking at pulling Jenkins anytime soon, but we are trying to divert more future engineering into these type of reusable workflow components. Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of my follow-up was like, what about the larger, more complex jobs?
Indeed, and there's some stuff that is going to be obviously challenging to move, but yeah, hopefully we'll get there eventually.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And actually, one of the things I found quite impressive was we've been using Sigil for artifact signing, for example, and various times supporting and maintaining the Sigil infrastructure has been somewhat painful for the team. It's not always been all that reliable. I was able to kind of shoehorn in Sigstore signing for these Python modules really easily because you basically just pull somebody else's workflow, pass it a few parameters. Funnily enough, you get to see the certificate and the signing process right there in the output from the job. Also, there's stuff like the security reporting is really pretty good. So if I can find, let me just quickly show you this. Maybe we'll go to examples. Take a quick look at these action outputs, right? So we can go back to security auditing. All right, let's just go back to this one here. All right, so this job's running pip audit basically in three Python versions. And right at the bottom here, you get a summary for each of those Python versions. It's the same package as causing issues, right? We've got version 2.2.3 of the WorkSug module, and that's got a security issue that's fixed in 3.0.1. Right? And this runs every time you get a merged domain or whatever, you can see this, and you have the full history there. It's really quite nice. I think, I'm just trying to think if I can find some examples of the Sigstore signing. I think if I go to, did a test build and release. Yeah. So take a look at this here. So here we go. So Sigstore Python signing right here. And you can see that, and it's right there in the workflow. It's very straightforward. And you can, the great thing is there's a lot of actions that people have authored out there already. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. You can put a lot of stuff off the shelf and import them directly into your workflow. There are some issues. I found a lot of code out there that there's some warnings and things like this where people are using old versions of Node.js, and you can see whether these things are being actively maintained or not. But I think there's a healthy ecosystem is built around this already, which means that if you've got a specific use case, you can quite often just take something off the shelf. You don't actually have to engineer it yourself. Or you can take somebody else's broken code, like I did in one example, and just update the Node.js stuff and fix the issues, and then raise a pull request on them and say, hey, you might want to do this because there's loads of people pulling your repository and you're spewing warnings out into GitHub, right? Sorry. Robert.
Yeah, so two questions. One on the Dependabot stuff.
Yeah.
Essentially, there's an option to raise pull requests to upgrade components.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's pull requests, not Garrett patches. Are there any plans to bridge that gap?
That's a good question. Right now, I mean, a lot of these things about triggers and particularly there's issues with self-updates that run in GitHub, anything that basically wants to write access to a repository right now is a no-no, because if you do that in GitHub and Garrett is your source, you potentially break synchronization. You're going to end up with changes in GitHub that aren't in Garrett, and that can actually break the repository mirroring. So that is currently one of the bigger problems for those projects who are embedded with Garrett. And but I think one of the things we might be able to do is try and find ways where we can to invoke those things from Garrett itself. Okay, if Garrett as a point of invocation can do that stuff, then it's not such a problem. We're fairly early in this journey.
Okay.
And tackling stuff like that probably is going to take us a little bit of time. It might be as well that the sort of these two-way communication is dependent on APIs from these guys to mature a little bit. But I would like to see stuff like that, because actually all this kind of security management, you know, dealing with security issues and having this stuff baked in is really great. And not having to manually go and update your packages, having this stuff flagged easily so you can find it, getting around to fixing it, you know, that takes developer eyeballs and it takes time. I've actually got a bunch of jobs right now set up for a project that every Monday I just come in and there's a pull request waiting for me to update some of the Python dependencies, right? You check it in and the tests run, and if the test's complete, then take a quick look at the build and make sure it's good, and away you go. It's very helpful.
Right. So, and the other question is, I guess eventually we will want to move our stage and release jobs to GitHub Actions. And for us, that requires essentially dealing with signing, signing Git tags and releasing stuff into Nexus. Right. So is there any timeline or anything that you can share?
not yet, but I think I think Nexus stuff is coming down the railway tracks at us, getting stuff published from GitHub Actions. Yeah, so soon, hopefully, but I can't make any commitments this time.
Okay.
Funny enough, most of my experience with GitHub Actions has actually been for another project, and most of the repositories I've been showing aren't LFN projects. It's OS Climate, open source Climate, which I'm assigned to. And some of my workflows I need to kind of re-architect using reusable actions. There's some stuff there where I've got two or three code repositories and I push a lot of the same stuff into all three of them. It's like, well, now actually I need to dog food this. I'm only really been using this for 2 or 3 months, but already I can see the value because it's actually a really good platform and it's a really good product. Hopefully you guys get to sense, you know, is this interesting? Is it exciting? Yeah. Good. Great stuff. All right, if we're done, I'll stop sharing, I'll stop the recording.